Stefan Fatsis is a thoughtful, productive, and reflective man who has, he concedes, built a significant part of his life around a board game. Mr. Fatsis, who writes about the business of sports for the Wall Street Journal and comments on sports for NPR's All Things Considered, has become an expert Scrabble player, currently ranked around the 200th best in the United States. Now, did you know that anyone bothers to rank Scrabble players? This is not a Garrison Keillor routine. Mr. Fatsis has also undertaken to become Scrabble's explorer and ambassador. His new book, Word Freak, details some of the anxieties, rivalries, triumphs, and truly glittering personalities of the world of Scrabble, a game invented during the Depression that's become a kind of obsession for a significant, if not always significant, number of people. Stefan Fatsis joins us from New York. Stefan, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Scott.
And this love for you, and I'll not call it an obsession for the moment, began in love.
It did, I guess. I started playing competitively against an old girlfriend, and I won a little bit too much for her taste, however. And when we broke up, I became the inheritor of the Scrabble board and Scrabble dictionary.
She put a particularly touching inscription in the book for you, didn't she?
She did. For consultation only, no memorizing. She was afraid that I would fall into the abyss of cheating, is what she thought it was, learning the words by rote so that I could play them against her.
Yeah, but as you detail it in the book, if you're going to be a serious Scrabble player, that's almost the first thing you have to do, isn't it?
It is. The first thing Scrabble players do is that they learn the 96 two-letter words, mm-hmm. and then it's a very slippery slope, Scott. Then it's the 1,000 three-letter words, the 4,000 four-letter words, and then you start plowing through the 10,000-plus seven- and eight-letter words, learning them in order of probability, and then you pretty much give your life over to this quest to master the unmasterable, learning this dictionary.
Mm-hmm. Now, you write that competitive Scrabble really has more to do with math, or at least as much to do with math as it does with language.
Oh, clearly. And this was something that people figured out early on. When the game was picked up, the game was manufactured in the 1950s. It took off in the 1950s, rather. Mm-hmm. And it was adopted by these hardcore games players in New York. Mm-hmm. And the games parlors were dominated by competitive minds, strategic minds, chess, backgammon players who in order to succeed, need to decipher the geometry of a board. Mm-hmm. And Scrabble became that way. And people figured quickly that what it was about was solving this puzzle that these letters were. These are combinations. They could be anything. They could be dots and dashes or widgets. They just happen to be letters. And in order to anagram, you need to take these letters, resolve this problem in a mathematical function, determine what the possibilities are. You have to constantly determine what the probabilities are that you're going to draw something out of the bag. And you have to be sort of analyzing the spatial relationships on this board. And those are all mathematical skills.
I was fascinated by the section you have describing the International Scrabble Championships in Melbourne, Australia. Aside from the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, the obvious choices, there are national delegations from countries where English is only an academic language.
That's right. Probably the most striking one is Thailand. No history of English colonial influence, very limited trade. English has never been a language of commerce. And what's happened in the last decade, you get these Thai players who have just memorized the list. They have no context for the words. They can barely speak and ask mm-hmm. directions to the bathroom or what to have for lunch. And yet they produce this absolute beauty and this strategic brilliance over the board. I recently played in a tournament in Reno, the biggest tournament this year in North America. There were about 225 players. And in the top expert division, there were three Thai players who finished in the top 10.
Is it possible that their approach is fresh because they're not learning the Scrabble English vocabulary as a usable vocabulary, but a strategic one?
Well, they're not encumbered by the burden of language.
Yeah.
There's not even a hint of thought about what something might mean or whether it's sort of creative. They're just playing in the most efficient manner possible.
Let me ask you about some of these personalities that you've encountered. Your Scrabble Zen master, if you please, Joe Edley.
Joe is one of the directors of the National Scrabble Association. Mm-hmm. He has made Scrabble his life. He's probably the one player in the competitive ranks that has successfully made Scrabble remunerative. He's made it a career. Joe's humble beginnings were in San Francisco when he bounced from meaningless job to meaningless job. And he just decided, I like playing games. I can be good at games. I can become a champion at this. He took a job as a night watchman, largely so he could read the first Scrabble dictionary and commit it to memory, which he did, and he won the next national championship.
Now, when I refer to him as your Zen master, that's not just another torturous cliche.
The focus of his teachings, if you will, are breath. He practices Tai Chi before tournaments and during tournaments. You'll often see him standing in the playing room doing exercises. Mm-hmm. And he basically taught me that you needed to focus, to sort of become one with the board, to shut out everything on the outside, to focus on your tiles, to not worry about whether you were winning or losing, but to focus on the one play that you had to make at a given moment and to breathe deeply, to maintain your energy and channel it through the tiles into your fingers and onto the board. It mm-hmm. kind of works.
And let me ask about Matt Graham, who was a stand-up comic. I think he briefly worked for Saturday Night Live.
He still is a stand-up comic, and he wrote briefly for Saturday Night Live. He discovered also about 10 years ago, later than some of these other guys, that he had this uncanny ability to decipher anagrams. And he quickly, very quickly, became one of the great players here. He's renowned for his sort of creativity on the board. He once had letters that allowed him to play between an N and a C that were seven spaces apart, the word nephritic, which no one that I know might have seen. And there's a word in between those letters, pithier. But he couldn't play pithier, so he found nephritic, which is pretty incredible.
Derived from the queen?
Derived from the kidney, I believe.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry. Do you learn more from the people than the game?
I learned as much from each, I think. The game taught me to balance things, to understand that I could succeed and I could fail, and that often it's not in my control. But more often than not, it is in my control. And if I focus and I pay attention and I apply the skills that I have, skills that I've both developed and that are in me, that are innate, that I can do it, that I can be successful at something that I had no idea that I could be successful at before I started on this road. And the players taught me that it's okay to care deeply about something that to most of the world appears to be frivolous. That's a board game, something that's boxed and manufactured and sold over the counter and extracted from the closet on weekends and holidays. That devotion to something, to a pursuit of the mind, which I think a lot of people in this country have lost sight of, is acceptable and is more than that. It's rewarding.
Stefan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Scott.
Stefan Fatsis, who writes for The Wall Street Journal and is a commentator on NPR's All Things Considered. His new book is called Word. That would add up to 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Freak. 4, 5, 6, 7, 12. Word freak.